say when common sense has really become uncommon?
Chesterton said that humanity has passed through every sort of storm and shipwreck, but for the first time we are confused about which is the storm and which is the shipwreck, and which is the ship and what we are rescuing from what. We are confused because we have lost our common sense. Hello, I'm Dale Ahlquist, and welcome to The Apostle of Common Sense, a series of programs where we explore the words and wisdom of the great English writer G.K. Chesterton. This is the final program in our series. It is the place where we will try to make some conclusions. What sets Chesterton apart from most other modern thinkers is that he made conclusions. He spoke with confidence, but not with arrogance, about what he believed. He was willing to take a stand and say what the truth is. He was also willing to say what the modern mistakes and errors are. And one of the greatest errors of the modern world is that it will not admit its errors. There is a vague idea that every idea is good. As Chesterton says, the modern mind cannot make up its mind. The modern mind thinks that the greatest of virtues is to be open-minded. But Chesterton says that the human mind is designed to come to conclusions, and if it doesn't do that, it's not doing its job.
An open mind is really a mark of foolishness, like an open mouth. The object of opening the mind, as of opening the mouth, is to shut it again on something solid.
In this series, we have called Chesterton an apostle of common sense. We could have also called him an evangelist, for he is certainly a bringer of good news, of uproariously good news. He shows us that laughter is divine. It is the shout of joy among the sons of men. But we also could have called Chesterton a prophet. Chesterton's words ring with a wisdom and insight that are not his own. Anyone who sits late at his banquets knows without doubt that something infinitely greater than him speaks through him, in the very same sense as that which we recite in the creed that God has spoken through the prophets. But Chesterton was also a prophet in that he described human events before they unfolded. Again and again he revealed a foresight that can only be described as prophetic. If we were to compile these prophecies, it would be an amazing list. Chesterton died 3 years before the beginning of World War II. But he warned against Hitler before anyone else. He warned that there would be an outbreak of violence against the Jews. He accurately predicted that the war would come, that it would begin on the Polish border, and that it would be the most horrible war in history. Long before that, he saw that the airplane would totally change warfare, leading to war that would not just be conducted against soldiers, but against innocent civilians. He recognized that technology, which is always advertised as being for our betterment, can just as easily be used to improve ways of killing people. He said that as an industrial society, we would use electricity, water power, and oil, and so on, to reduce the work imposed on each of us to a minimum. But the machine would become our master, and technology would create as many problems as it solved.
The same modern industrial civilization which aims at rapidity also produces congestion. The modern world is a crowd of very rapid racing cars, all brought to a standstill and stuck in a block of traffic. Civilization has run on ahead of the soul of man and is producing faster than he can think and give thanks. We have thought of many ways of going to the North Pole. We may yet think of some way of going to the other side of the moon. And there can be nothing really arresting along that line of thought except the truly arresting question of whether we particularly want to go there. An Englishman can communicate with Manhattan by wireless, and he may yet communicate with Mars by wireless. And in both cases, nothing remains but the deeper and darker problem of thinking of something to say.
Chesterton predicted both the rise and the fall of communism in Russia. He predicted that in the meantime, the government there would be a rigid bureaucracy, that small nations would be swallowed by that empire, but would break loose again and survive the empire. And while the fears of the Western world would all focus on the godless communists in Russia, Chesterton warned that the next great heresy would be right here, and it would be an attack on morality, especially sexual morality. He said, "The madness of tomorrow is not in Moscow, but much more in Manhattan." He correctly predicted that there would be a fashionable fatalism founded on Freud. He said, "We would at once exalt lust and forbid fertility. We would eventually be no different from the commercial centers of antiquity like Carthage, where they threw their babies into the fire." He predicted that abortion would be considered a sign of progress. He said, "Our materialistic masters would put birth control into an immediate practical program before anyone was even aware that it happened, and that it would be applied to everybody and imposed by nobody." The old parental authority, he said, would be swept away. Its place would be taken not by liberty or even license, but by a far more sweeping and destructive authority, the authority of the state. The state would become the only absolute in morals, so there'd be no appeal from it to God or man, Christendom or conscience, to the individual or the family or the fellowship of all mankind. We would then try to use the government to remedy all the failures of the families, all the nurseries, all the schools, all the workshops, all the secondary institutions that once had some authority of their own. There would be rebellion, but the new rebels would not lay down rules, only exceptions. And Chesterton said that the one institution he was sure would expand is the institution we call prison. And Chesterton seemed to be writing for today when he said that the Christian was expected to praise every creed except his own. He said that extremism is the fashionable term of reproach, and any Christian who actually wanted to argue on behalf of his own faith was dismissed as an extremist.
The true religion of today does not concern itself with dogmas and doctrines. It concerns itself almost entirely with diet. Modern materialism is solemn about sports because it has no other rites to solemnize. Many modern people have a sort of reverence for the cinema, not only because a lot of money is got out of it, but merely because a lot of money is put into it. Men in a state of decadence employ professionals to fight for them, professionals to dance for them, and a professional to rule them.
The great Catholic apologist Frank Sheed, whose wife Macy Ward wrote a biography of Chesterton, was one of many who marveled at the uncanny precision of Chesterton's predictions. And he said of Chesterton, "When a man is right in his forecasts, there is some reason to think he may be right in his premises." And that's the important point. Chesterton was right in his premises. That is why he should be read and should be taught and should be studied. It's why the renowned scholar Etienne Gilson said Chesterton was one of the deepest thinkers who ever lived. He was deep because he was right. Chesterton was right. He was right about both religion and politics. There are some who may agree with his religious writings, but who would rather ignore his political ideas. And there are others who read Chesterton only for his political ideas and don't care at all for his religious writings. But with Chesterton, you really can't separate the two, for the same reason that truth and justice cannot be separated. And while the two go together, Chesterton said that we do tend to make one mistake. We tend to make politics too important.
We tend to forget how huge a part of a man's life is the same under a sultan or under a senate, under Nero or St. Louis. Daybreak is a never-ending glory. Getting out of bed is a never-ending nuisance. Food and friends will be welcomed. Work and strangers must be accepted and endured. Birds will go bedwards, and children won't, to the end of the last evening. And the worst peril is that in our modern revolt against intolerable accidents, we may have unsettled those things that alone make daily life tolerable. It will be an ironic tragedy if, when we have toiled to find rest, we find we are incurably restless. It will be sad if, when we worked for our holiday, we find we have unlearned everything but work. The typical modern man is the insane millionaire who has drudged to get money, and then finds he cannot even enjoy money, but only drudgery. There is a danger that the social reformer may develop some of this madness of the millionaire whom he denounces. He may find that he has learned how to build playgrounds, but forgotten how to play.
There is only the church and the world. There is nothing else. When it comes to the world, Chesterton reminds us that we have to hate it enough to want to change it, but love it enough to think it worth changing. Politics can get personal because of the intensity of that combination of love and hatred for the world. It is important to know that Chesterton defended patriotism as something perfectly natural. But once again, patriotism means hating your country enough to want to change it, even while you love it enough to think it worth changing.
The man who says, my country, right or wrong, is like the man who says, my mother, drunk or sober.
Chesterton did not like representatives who did not represent, and officials who put themselves above citizens rather than at their service, and government which meddled in people's lives. He believed in democracy and defended democracy against any other form of government. But democracy is more than just voting, just as being a Christian is much more than going to church. Democracy really means that the most important decisions must not be decided for people, but must be left up to people to decide for themselves. Chesterton believed that the common man would act with common sense for the common good, but that his dignity and his freedom must be protected. He said that just as Christianity looks for the honest man inside the thief, democracy looks for the wise man inside the fool, and it encourages the fool to be wise. It is the snobs who insist on being foolish, with bizarre theories and unthinkable behavior. They attack common sense. Chesterton said that all of life's great questions should be asked in words of one syllable and answered in words of one syllable. The snobs of the world avoid words of one syllable because they avoid common sense, plain words, clear thinking. They prefer long words, which are a substitute for thinking. And the one-syllable words that they most avoid are these, sin and faith. They don't want to face these simple, gigantic truths, that we have taken a good world and spoiled it, that we have to repent and return to the faith. Instead, they attack the faith, or they ignore the faith, or they try to carry on without the faith. In one of his typical paradoxes, Chesterton said that sometimes a thing can be too big to be seen. What the world can no longer see is that it was the Catholic Church that laid the foundation for Western civilization. The world has tried to push the Church aside, but in the meantime, the world is still living off its Catholic capital. Only the Church can cure the ills which now face this civilization. Those who have abandoned the Church have, in effect, cut themselves off from something much greater than they realize. They cannot cure the ills. As Chesterton said, a severed hand cannot cure the whole body. But not only does the world stubbornly refuse to get the Church's help, some people even make themselves enemies of the Church and try to prevent it from having any influence in society. They try to discredit the church by making all kinds of sensational charges against it. Chesterton shows how contradictory this is.
When people impute special vices to the Christian church, they seem to entirely forget that the world, which is the only other thing there is, has these vices much more. The church has been cruel, but the world has been much more cruel. The church has plotted, but the world has plotted much more. The church has been superstitious, but it has never been so superstitious as the world is when left to itself.
Chesterton said that the earnest free thinkers, who are so worried about the persecutions of the past, are quite blind to what would happen in the world if their own ideas prevail. In one of his most chilling prophecies, he said, "Before the liberal idea is dead or triumphant, we shall see wars and persecutions the like of which the world has never seen." Perhaps better than any other 20th century writer, Chesterton showed that the faith is the only thing that really makes sense. And though he wrote millions of words, he summed up his defense of the faith in only a few words.
The only argument against losing faith is that you also lose hope and generally charity.
Father Ian Boyd, the founder and editor of the Chesterton Review, made one of the most insightful observations about Chesterton when he said that Chesterton never writes so profoundly about religion as when he is writing about something else. Chesterton understood that Christianity is not confined only to what we do in church. It touches everything. It touches marriage and economics and literature and art and work and play and daydreams. Chesterton not only showed how reasonable the faith is, but that it is the only thing that makes us fully functional. It is the only thing that can make us happy, because it is connected to eternal happiness. And this happiness filled G.K. Chesterton, filled him to overflowing. Chesterton was a complete thinker because his Catholic faith informed all his thinking. That is why he is so consistent and so wondrously profound. In this series, we've explored only 12 of Chesterton's books, but he wrote dozens more. We haven't looked at any of his novels or plays, his history or travel books, or his incomparable literary criticism, particularly his glorious writing on Charles Dickens. We haven't looked at any of his wonderful poetry, which includes The Donkey, a little poem which every school child should memorize, and The Ballad of the White Horse, an epic poem which every college student should study. We've only scratched the surface of the thousands of essays he wrote, essays about everything and everything else. Chesterton is big. He may be too big to get a hold of. He may be too big to be seen, but he's too big to be ignored. We've tried to give him some of the attention he deserves, to bring his words alive. We've tried to introduce you to him, to give you the opportunity to get to know him. These first meetings have been far too brief. Hopefully, you will make yourself better acquainted with his books, many of which are published by Ignatius Press, and by reading Gilbert Magazine and the Chesterton Review. Once you read Chesterton, you will find that you want to read more of him. And what will please you and astonish you is that he wrote so much that you will probably never read it all. I'd also like to invite you, if you can, to support the American Chesterton Society and help revive a widespread interest in this writer, to get him taught in the schools again, and to get his ideas back into the public arena. But most of all, I would like to invite you simply to make friends with G.K. Chesterton, to laugh with him and have the pleasure of lifting a glass of wine with him and sitting long at the table with him and all the giants of the faith. For that is the fellowship we were made for. We follow the feet where all souls meet at the inn at the end of the world. I'm Dale Alquist. Thanks for joining us on the Apostle of Common Sense.